When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/audioboom.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
Hi everyone, my name is Andra Stanoyu and you're listening to the Healthy Debate Show on UK Health Radio and Podcast. Our discussion today revolves around the gut-brain-skin axis and its profound influence on skin health. So let's dive in, but the good news is that I'm not being alone. Today we have a special guest joining us, Dr. Jinga Patel. Dr. Patel has an impressive background with a career initially focused on pediatrics and general practice that soon transformed into interests that gravitated towards dermatology and mental health. Over the past few years, Dr. Patel transitioned towards a more holistic approach to health and wellness, integrating aesthetics, skin health, and regenerative medicine. Dr. Patel's expertise has led her to become a clinical lead advisor at Hinawa Technology, and a very sought-after speaker, recently making her international debut at the Dubai Derma 2024. We're honored to have her joining us today and explore the fascinating intersection between gut, brain, and skin health. But before we dig into the topic, Dr. Patel, welcome. And please tell us a few things about your professional background and whatever you feel comfortable sharing with us today.
Well, thank you very much, Andra, and it's a pleasure to do this with you. It's a wonderful experience, and I think when we want to talk about my background, it's been quite a fascinating journey. I've learned a lot about myself over the last 3 years in particular, but I always thought I was going to be destined to be a pediatrician. I actually initially thought I was going to head into a career in science, and I gave that up. Funnily enough, which sometimes I do regret, because now I'm at a phase in my career where I'm starting to really appreciate what science means and where the future is going to lie. So I found myself moving into general practice because, as a natural progression outside of leaving pediatrics, it was the only profession I felt that I could apply my skills and knowledge on a frequent basis so that I got the exposure to children. And it was during my training that I found my love for the skin. I had a trainer who was a special interest GP in dermatology, and that's where that started. So it took me a while to kind of find my feet, and then I decided to take the plunge and move part of my life into the cosmetic and aesthetic realm. But I was never ever going to leave medicine, and I think that's where people find it a little bit surprising, but I soon realized through my own challenges in my personal life, having experienced anxiety with depression and having that in 2016, it really opened my eyes to wanting to know about people more. So I couldn't think of a better combination of careers to have than this. And I'm in a happy medium and a happy place. So I try and live like a blended approach to practice. And I think I've now found my own techniques and own vibe, which for me works for my patients and for both types of careers. And now I'm heading into cellular health and trying to understand how our body is put together and really resonating with my life experience, but also not having the fear to share that with patients. And I think that's how I've found myself, my purpose.
I think what's fascinating for me when I've heard your story the first time when we first spoke was your openness to integrate these different sides of your life, personal life and professional life, but integrate it in a way that actually serves the patient and goes beyond beyond yourself and beyond your own development. I'm curious to understand, just from your experience, how do you think the community, that professional community that you're operating in, is how open do you think the community is to this holistic approach, to having a 360 view on a patient's health / mental health / well-being?
So that's a really interesting question, because I'm seeing it from two angles. So in the medical environment, so not just general practice, but in medicine, it is very much still one directional. And I think, and I'm very open about this, I trained that way, and I didn't know any better. And you don't know any better. You jump through hoops and A equals B, and then you treat with C. And that's how we were educated and taught. So I have to battle that with colleagues, but not on a negative level. It's very narrow-minded. And then on the flip side of that, and I'll just kind of emphasize that it is polar extreme. You will have the aesthetic and cosmetic arena, which is now starting to understand the holistic approach. And we're moving very rapidly in a functional direction. And I find it fascinating that I'm kind of not torn, but I do find myself challenged when I'm trying to operate in two ways. And I think that's how I've manage to kind of apply both principles and give the patient choice as to what they want to do. And it was a risk doing that. And often when I have, you know, meetings with clinical colleagues, and I'm the one that says, but have we thought about this angle? It's often met with kind of raised eyebrows, wide eyes. Mm-hmm. And it's not woo-woo science. This is another way that someone might want to approach their health with, but we haven't asked. So why don't we start asking the questions? And I have definitely taken that approach in my own practice, because the doors flood open. You can figure out patients very quickly. And actually the bonds that end up being created, even if it's the most challenging topics, become very easy, because all they want to do is connect with you. So I thought, okay, I really want to dive more into that. And I really want to understand what is out there for people. So that required me, and it's not for everyone, it required me to step out of my comfort zone and to learn from colleagues that I'd never been trained by. I'd never really understood what they did. And that is very narrow-minded. So it was a wake-up call for me. And I think more people are heading that way because of the amount of information that's out there, of what patients want to know and consumers or people want to know. Health awareness has massively exploded. And I don't want to say it's all down to the pandemic, but I think because of what's out there and all of the available information, people are becoming more savvy. So you have to keep up with that. And if you don't, you're not going to meet the expectations and needs, and then that fuels the stress and that fuels the burden. So I kind of feel like I'm floating between two realms, but I'm really comfortable with it.
So Dr. Patel, let's go back to our main topic, gut-brain-skin axis function. How does this work? What is the role of each of these systems in maintaining skin health?
So this is really fascinating, and these are kind of key buzzwords which have come to the forefront more so in the last few years from a functional perspective, but we're starting to understand these a bit better. So it sounds really silly, but a lot of us look at the external features of us, and we especially when it comes to skin, It's the largest organ, and we all know that, and we all know that we need to protect the surface and support the barrier. But I think the key thing is that it's not just about the skin. We are so intricately linked internally, and yes, that predominantly involves the function of the gut, and it does involve the function of the brain, but there are multiple pathways connecting all three, which involves several other organs, hormones, and the psychology. So you will see often people talk about gut-brain connections or gut-skin connections, but it's not as simple as that. So I just want to keep it simple so that it's of interest to people. But everybody probably does know that there is this movement towards supporting our gut health. Gut, gut, gut. It's all about the gut. Yes, it is to an extent. If we have a healthy gut, and what I mean by that is a healthy gut barrier, which has the right microorganisms or bacteria in its lining, functioning as it should, doing what it should, then in theory, we shouldn't be having issues elsewhere. So what do the issues happen? Well, I don't want to say Western diet because I think that's unfair. It's the highly processed food diet, and there is real logic behind that. If we are not getting what our gut microbes need, so this is fiber essentially, we're having fiber because we want to feed our microbes. It's not to feed us. And the reason why we need to do that is to help those bacteria produce substances, which then go on to do other things in a good way. But if we're not able to provide the nutrition and support for those bacteria in the form of prebiotics, then we can't have the bacteria that are good do their job effectively to produce something called postbiotics. So those are good chemicals or short chain fatty acids, which then go off to maintain the gut wall and to protect the leak of toxins. So if we aren't able to meet the gut's needs, then that barrier starts to fall apart. And that's where we get this situation occur called leaky gut. So I think that's something that I think a lot of people start to understand. So are we literally leaking? Well, in a way, yes, because our barrier is no longer this lovely wall held together. There's gaps. And what happens when you have gaps? Well, you get leakage of pro-inflammation chemicals. So where do those chemicals go? Several places, actually. They head off to the brain. They head off to the base of the skin. They can head off to your joints. And I see a lot of patients, now that I understand this, I think, right, so I'm dealing with somebody who's come in, for instance, and they have psoriasis, just an example, but they're really stressed. But what's happening when they're really stressed? They're binge eating or trying to find short-term fixes to cope with the stress to give them some comfort. So you start to connect the dots and think, well, what else is going on? I'm achy, I'm sore, I'm bloated, I've got constipation, I've got diarrhea. And I think, right, goodness me, instead of just thinking, right, I'm going to just focus on the skin, I need to wind back several steps and get to what's perpetuated that skin problem, just to kind of connect these things together. So when we start to think, right, if we were to peel back instead of just focusing on what we see externally, all the clues start to unfold. And then we start to think, right, how do we make things better? Do we just treat what we see on the surface? And to some extent, and I will kind of be neutral about this, there is a place for medication. There's a place for topical treatment. But what's perpetuating that problem? And if we wind back and deal with the root cause, we're less likely to have the problem in the first place for certain conditions. So psoriasis is a really good example, because I'll just refer to my own experience, because I was working throughout the pandemic. I couldn't believe that the number one presenting condition that I saw was psoriasis. There was an explosion of it. And I thought, goodness me, like, why now? And it took a while for me to figure out. It's because everyone is so stressed.
Stressed, yeah.
And I thought, right, okay. We're so stressed. And there's actually data to show that the severity of psoriasis correlates with stress. But why? So what happens when we're stressed? Well, we get structural changes at the surface of our skin layers. Cells from our immune system and from our pro-inflammation side of our body start to aggregate in certain areas of inflammation, and that just perpetuates this vicious process. And then that then itself perpetuates the skin condition. So it makes sense to me, and I hope it will make sense to you and your listeners, but if we actually peel back and think about all of these connections, we can then think about, right, is it just a case of slap on a topical or slap on a medication and be done with it? Well, no, because if you don't address the trigger, it will keep happening. So that's where my interest in trying to make the connections between the body came from. But when we are so stressed and when we are anxious, we release hormones and brain chemicals. And the interesting thing is, there are lots of people out there who have done some very helpful work around looking at the skin stress response. So our nerves from our brain and our immune system is very well connected. But when we're in this heightened stress, or should I say, you'll hopefully know Paul Gilbert, he's a psychologist who talks about threat and drive systems. When we release certain hormones, that then feeds down and communicates to our adrenal glands, which sit on top of our kidneys. And they then release chemicals, which then go to the skin, just as an example of being specific here. But there are various structures within the skin layers, whether it's the sebaceous glands, the nerve endings, the blood vessels, the skin cells, on there, and those individual areas then produce other substances. So it's direct or indirect communication. So I actually sit down with patients when I'm in this scenario and I think, is stress the cause of your problems? And I'm seeing it more than I thought I would, but trying to make the connections with patients makes them understand their bodies more. And that's what I'm referring to when we talk about gut brain skin axis. We can't afford to think of just brain by itself, just gut by itself, and just skin. We were never made that simply. We are so beautifully put together that actually the fascination lies in the communication between all of them.
One thing that I really love about having these type of conversations with specialists, with doctors like you, is the fact that when you start talking, I get a list full of diagnoses that I put on my own concerns, and I'm like, oh, I tick this box. So I think our listeners are doing the same, thinking, oh goodness me, so this is why this, and this is why that, and this is how, you know, stress impacts my skin. So this is my personal curiosity. There's a lot of conversation about gut health, and It's always been very fascinating to me how a diet and what we eat influences everything that you mentioned. Influences the skin, the mental health, your well-being. You know, for example, when I'm being stressed, I'm usually quite tempted to eat sweet foods. They don't do anything for me, anything that's productive, anything that takes me in a better place. On the contrary, I feel more tired. I feel the need to eat more, and so on and so forth. Doesn't allow me to sleep. So in a nutshell, can we discuss very briefly about the gut diet? What will be an ideal daily meal plan to ensure that the gut is feeling good, is in a good shape, that allows us to maintain this axis at the right standard?
Yeah, so that's a really good question. And I think this is where, you know, I have this chat with patients because they're like, oh gosh, here we go with the fiber. I cannot emphasize how important fiber is. And I'll tell you why it's important, because the why is, you know, the crux of all of this is the whys. Because when you put the whys down, people then go, okay, you're not just telling me to do something, are you? It's the why. So consumption of fiber, essentially this gut barrier that I was telling you about, we have to be able to absorb our calories. And everyone thinks as soon as it goes into your stomach, this is me got my calorie intake, but it's never actually that simple. Our small intestine's involved in absorption of calories. But as I said before at the beginning, I said, we're feeding us with fiber for our microbes and not for us. So if we have the adequate fiber intake, whether that's high fiber cereals, whether that's whole or granary breads, potatoes with skin on them, beans, lentils, vegetables, the green and leafy ones in particular, what you're essentially doing is promoting this protective coat barrier, keeping our microbes and the bacteria diversity where it should be, because we want to be more diverse in the bowel. We want to have more players in the bowel, and that's quite different to the skin surface, which we can come to afterwards. But in order for the microbes to get what they need to have a food source, and that is your fibers, your prebiotics, so that they can make the good stuff, the postbiotics. So that's why you need fiber. It's not just to make you healthier. It actually has a purpose. But I'll tell you something else. It's the sugar. Now, it's not every sugar, because that's another eye roll for a lot of people. It's fructose in particular. So fructose is made up of one glucose and one fructose molecule. But why is it so bad for you? Well, actually, it's all to do with cellular root health. Fructose directly affects mitochondrial function. So for your listeners, mitochondria are little powerhouses in our cells. They do lots and lots of clever things, but they're involved in energy production. So if you have unhappy mitochondria, you don't function very well. And that has a whole array of other complications. And fructose actually affects mitochondria. We now know that. So it's a driver of dysfunction. So that is why people feel worse when they have high sugar diets and highly unprocessed foods, because sugar's addictive. Well, fructose is addictive. It's really bad for you. So I sit and have these conversations with patients and people and saying, these are the whys. And you can, there's lots of helpful information online about how to lower your fructose intake. So I thought, once I learned that concept about fructose, I actually challenged myself. And I actually have a really lovely example of a patient who has acne. And I have talked about her online, and she's so lovely. She came to meet me last year, and she had acne that just, it was really affecting her mentally. She'd been to several specialists. She'd been to dermatologists. She'd been on Roaccutane several times. She had a very strong family history of acne. She had a strong family history of autoimmune disease. And I thought, goodness me, this is not just acne. I have to get to the problem here. So work through her medical history and work through her family history. And then I was like, hang on a second, what are you eating? And she's like, I eat zero fiber, zero vegetables, zero. And I was like, really? Like nothing? She goes, yeah. And I was like, but why? I don't want to. And I was like, okay, I'm just going to be frankly honest with you. I have a very big suspicion that if we sort out your diet, I was treating her aesthetically as well, but very simply, we're going to change your life. So I sat down with her, and it took me several months, but we got there in the end. We started to introduce low fructose foods and a vegetable per week. That was it. And actually, she's come out the other end in her best skin health ever. So you can see that certain things that we talk about publicly, low sugar, low fructose in particular, high fiber, has cellular health benefits.
What are some examples of low fructose foods?
Great question. Yeah, so actually, low fructose foods is predominantly the majority of, actually all of the vegetables, but fruit. People think, oh, any fruit will do. So actually, it's the berry family.
Yeah, exactly. I read that. Berry. That's so interesting.
Yeah, no, really, it really is. There is data on this. The blackberries, blueberries, raspberries in particular, have the lowest amount of fructose and have the highest amount of fiber. So you don't have to cut everything out. You just have to modify your sugar intake in the right way. And it does, and I've done this personally as well, when through all of my learning, which has been so out of my comfort zone, I've made little changes and it has completely transformed my gut health. And it's not requiring me to go and seek multiple specialist advice. It's not, you know, having to pay for lots and lots of tests and investigations. This stuff actually does work. So I hope that's inspiring for people to make change. But that is the crux of it, is at a cellular level, these things are harming you.
I was reading about the berry families, and they were called superfoods because they are so amazing. And there are some studies, I recall correctly, that also connected with longevity and in general, you know, better health. And they're so small and so powerful, isn't it? And so easy to eat on the run, because that's also important. You know, we have very fast-paced lives, and sometimes just putting a handful of berries in your cereal bowl or have some in your lunchbox, you know, it's just easy to eat. It's like snacking, but in a very healthy way, isn't it? Rather than snacking on chips or, you know, other alternatives that are less helpful.
Well, the way I see it, my gut bacteria are happy naturally. If I feed it the right stuff, they're happy. They then do the right thing. They then don't give off or cause a breakdown in the back, not them per se, but the barrier doesn't then break down. And then we don't get the toxin leak. And then we don't get the bowel problems and the brain fog issues and then the skin issues. I know it's not as simple as that for everything, but a lot of what we see and deal with comes down to what we consume.
And yeah, how, and that's prevention, isn't it? Yeah.
Well, yeah.
No, absolutely. I agree 100%. And to be fair, you know, I'm also now reflecting on my habits, my food habits. You know, if I have a week with no berries, I already feel, because I eat them every day. I'm absolutely, I love them. They're easy to eat. Yeah. I love everything about them. So if I have a week with no berries, I already feel that my body is a bit uncomfortable. And
it's
to
funny
be fair,
you say that, because I was in that situation last week, not by choice, but because I was traveling, obviously. And you have changes in your routine, and it's amazing how you feel. You think, oh, you know, it'll be fine, but within days, your bowel function changes. You feel lethargic, or apart from jet lag and things like that, but there's subtle things that your body's responding to, and then you have a change in your environment. And I think the more we become as people attuned to how we feel, we're more likely to want to hopefully do something about it.
Absolutely. And Dr. Patel, we have to take a short commercial break, because we just went on and on the topic because it was so interesting. But now we need to pause for a couple of minutes, then return and continue our conversation about the gut-brain-skin axis and see alternative ways of, you know, feeling better than we did yesterday, or, you know, prevent any health and mental health conditions to appear. We'll be back with Dr. Patel shortly.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom. all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/audioboom.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
And we're back with Dr. Patel. We're discussing the axis gut brain skin. Dr. Patel, we started the conversation around your wish to bring a different flavor to traditional medicine and contribute in a way that's more holistic and supports the patient from as many perspectives as possible. Now, we might have some people listening that are quite traditional and they're still going to prefer functional medicine. And I'm sure you are to some extent, because that's why you are a general practitioner, isn't it? So how do we incorporate functional medicine principles, traditional medicine principles, to address underlying causes of skin issues rather than just treating the symptoms?
So, you know, I have these very honest conversations with patients and say, you know, there are always going to be groups of people who will want the medical approach. They want you to manage them. They want medication. There are people who want these things. It makes them feel better. But I spend my time trying to get people to understand that, you know, there are, what is it that you're trying to achieve? How do you cope with the problems that you are dealing with? So, and I do try and address coping styles, because then that helps to bring in that conversation about other measures. So for lots of people who may avoid beneficial tactics, who might try and cover up, who try to consume foods, especially if they're trying to deal with stressful conditions, I think, okay, is medication really going to fix that? Probably not. And I definitely have this approach when it comes to mental health, because there is that avenue of therapy, obviously, and there is that avenue of medication. But ultimately, we have to get to how people function and think, and what are they motivated to do? So I try and bring in principles that involve looking at breathing, I'm a big believer in yin yoga, and I know that's not for everyone. And it wasn't for me until I understood the principles of breathing. And how do we calm and soothe ourselves so that we can cope with adversity? And I know that's a very general statement, but actually, if you think about the principles of that, patients and people want to feel better. Why don't they feel good? It might be because of a medical illness, but what's going up in the head mentally? And I try to focus on explaining this emotional regulation model, because when I try and explain to people that if you're constantly in a threat and drive response, your body's nervous system is heightened. So what are ways to cope with that? I'm not being funny, but it's not medication. And I know that sounds wild because I'm originally a GP, but it's not. And that is why people talk about mindfulness. It's why people talk about vagal toning, because it's those particular things that help us to de-escalate those two systems that I was mentioning. And I'm a big believer in soothing and calming. And I do think our underdeveloped soothing system is the core of a lot of trauma, a lot of psychological disorders, a lot of autoimmune conditions. And I try to think, right, I have to get to the crux of what's going to help this person in the long term. It's not medication that helps someone in the long term. It is ways of life. It is understanding and respecting how and what should be on our skin surface, what should be on our gut, in our gut. And when that becomes more apparent, people then think, well, actually, yeah, I need to be able to de-escalate all of the chaos to feel better. So that's how I start to introduce that topic of the functional side. It's not woo-woo science. I was in non-cancer when I was in my 20s because I didn't know. But it has logic and principles. The less dysregulated you are, nervous system-wise, the healthier and happier you become. It is so simple, yet we somehow have made it very complicated. And that partly is because of medical practice, but it's also because people don't quite understand that in order to help yourself feel better, these alternative principles are necessary and take work, a lot of work, to help you get the long-term results.
So now that we looked into the functional medicine principles, let's flip the coin and let's address the holistic approach. So what do we do with patients? How do you approach patients who are a bit more skeptical to look at the holistic approach for skin health particularly? And the reason why I'm asking this is because maybe some people think that, you know, you have a skin problem, you put a cream on a moisturizer or some sort of, solution that will make the problem disappear and make the area that's quite visible, improve. So it's kind of, it's not immediate reward, but psychologically it's kind of there, which is quite different from a liver, right? So you're taking some pills and you hope for the best, you hope for the next visit to the doctor that will tell you that, you know, the liver looks better. But actually with skin, you can see it. So the reward is quite immediate with skin conditions. How do we convert? How do we convince? Or we just don't do any of that. We're just presenting the holistic approach to this type of skeptical patients.
Well, I think when we start to understand and teach people, so I'm going to give you an example. As a holistic approach, and you may or may not know, your listeners in particular, red light therapy, right? That's completely holistic. The science behind red light therapy is fascinating because of its wavelength, and we won't go into the technicalities. It's designed for at a certain wavelength, at a certain intensity, for a certain amount of time to heal us at a cellular level. So I try to explain to patients, there are lots of things we can do holistically that don't involve spending money, that benefits us down to the cell level, that in turn will help you to psychologically feel better about yourself, which will then, especially if it's a stress-induced condition, mean you have less flare-ups, which means you'll come and see me less. And when you start making and connecting these dots, they're like, okay, well, yeah, maybe. And then sometimes I'll have to have these conversations several times. I'm one of these practitioners that doesn't like to simply give you the acute reward, because it's a type of suffering. Anything that you have as a condition, it's a type of suffering. I'm not meaning, you know, painful suffering. It is in some way affecting someone's life. And this culture of quick fixes and this culture of instant rewards, there's no long-term solution in that. Yes, we want to support, for instance, the skin barrier's integrity, for sure, and to help retain moisture, for sure, and keep in the good stuff and keep out the bad stuff. But if you're going to simply rely on quick fixes, the problem just recurs. And I don't actually struggle with that, because I think I'm naturally attracting those patients. But I do think that it depends where you are in the world. And I think it depends who is talking to you. If you have a practitioner and a person who all you've ever said to your patients says, here is the only solution, or here's this solution, and if it doesn't work, we'll go to the next drug and then the next one. Patients are just, a lot of people trust us, and that I take to heart. But is it really going to address the ongoing issues, which are always internal? No. And I often will put patients in positions where I'm like, you know, you can go and have, you know, early morning light exposure, set your circadian rhythm, eat your fiber, reduce your fructose, exercise, because there is evidence to suggest that that turns on longevity genes, particularly sirtuin 1, that give you long-term benefits that you don't even have to put much effort to other than want to do it. And I think that's the crux of it. People have to want to help themselves. And there is a fine line between my role, which is here you go, off you go, and see me if you need to, and actually saying to patients, I want you to take responsibility and I want you to consider everything that you can possibly do to help yourself. And that takes a bit of a bold approach, but actually in reality, I can only be responsible to a certain extent, right? We're all responsible for our health. It's how we choose to play that game. And sometimes, especially in life-threatening conditions and things, you know, severe infection, of course, you need medication. That it serves a purpose, but it's not the solution for everyone.
I think we're just going back to the initial conversation, isn't it, about double accountability and making sure that you are being honest with your doctor and you are following the advice and guidance, and you are considering the variety of options put in front of you. Dr. Patel, let's have a short break. We'll come back with some conclusions. I really want us to look into very briefly some basic common dietary and lifestyle factors that you can that can exacerbate or alleviate skin conditions. So just a very brief summary of those ones. We'll be back with Dr. Patel very shortly.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at rubrik.com. That's RUBRIK.com.
Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Okay, we're back with Dr. Patel. We're discussing a lot of things, but the main topic today is gut brain skin axis. Dr. Patel, we're getting close to the end of our conversation, but I am very curious to close this conversation with you around the diet and the lifestyle factors. So what are some of these that can either exacerbate or actually alleviate skin conditions? And how would you counsel a patient to make these adjustments?
Sure. So I think it's commonplace, apart from the dietary intake, right? So the highly processed foods, it's not just the fact that these are quick process, not naturally put together, no effort required. It's often what's in those foods that causes the problems. The additives, as I mentioned before, types of sugar, chemicals, how things are made. And I'm not a chemicals expert, but you get the gist. Smoking. Smoking has not just issues for the lungs, but integrity of the skin, the toxins and chemicals that come from that. We're just exposing our body to have to work harder to deal with that using our antioxidant systems. lack of exercise and a sedentary lifestyle. So this one's really interesting. And I don't just say to patients, you know, it's because you have excess weight and it's because you don't actually move. We now know that in those particular groups of people, their gut microbiome, again, I'm coming back to gut, aren't I? Their gut microbiome is significantly less diverse. And why is that a problem for them? It's because they end up not making enough hydrogen. And that's a type of antioxidant, probably for our next conversation when we do have that. And instead of fermenting fiber, these individuals produce methane gas. And that is because the gut microbiota are so unhappy. And that's because they're not diverse. So it's losing the weight is more than just physical appearance benefits. Indirectly, you're helping to build and support your gut function because you then increase your diversity of gut microbes. And that is a concept that a lot of people don't quite understand. But I think the other aggravating factors, as I mentioned before, psychological stress and having this barrier to seeking help. You know, we often see patients and people who, because of their psychological stress and disorders, delay seeking help. And they delay seeking help, which means their skin conditions get worse. And you see them at a heightened presentation, and the work is so much more intense because, and just refer, you know, I like to talk about myself as well. But when you are in a psychological state where you cannot function because you're exhausted, and it is an absolute challenge to get out of bed to function on a day-to-day basis. For me to then sit down and say to a patient, I want you to do X, Y, and Z, you're not going to get anywhere because they need the support in order to get to a point where they can make the change. And that is so challenging. And I think when you have that grace and approach to and sympathy and empathy, I've noticed when I've taken on the strategy with skin health, when I've gone and dealt with the psychological aspects first, almost all of my patients have had a better outcome because they felt seen and heard, and they felt that they had the energy to actually deal with their issues. So there are other factors as well, obviously, pollution, where you live, travel, what you consume, what you don't consume. There's so many factors that are commonplace amongst a variety of conditions. But I know that we're going to be finishing this podcast shortly, but something that's new and that's kind of inspired me to really delve back into the science at a skin level is this whole attitude to how we think of our skin microbiome. And what we've been doing all this time is actually counterproductive in a lot of cases. So trying to strip the surface of the skin, trying to overexfoliate, trying to get rid of bacteria, particularly the one that everyone thinks causes acne. Well, actually, we're turning an absolute corner now, because when we're not putting back in what needs to be on the skin surface, there are a lot of conditions that actually get worse. So it's fascinating. There's a lot of work around this topic. And I know we've spoken to you already about a particular doctor. His name is Dr. Thomas Hitchcock, has written a phenomenal book, and also the work that's coming out of his lab, which has completely revolutionized the way I treat particular skin conditions, just on the basis of understanding what should and shouldn't be on the skin surface. So there are so many individual factors, but almost always there is a dietary component, and with some control and with some without some control, there's obviously the lifestyle.
Dr. Patel, thank you so much for joining us today on the Healthy Debate Show. Sure. Taking care of our skin does involve more than just what we put on it. It's about nourishing our bodies, our mind, our souls. And I'm sure that our listeners will be interested, some of them, to reach out to you and maybe seek some more information, more advice. Is there any platform that you can share with us, a social media platform, or anywhere they can reach out to you and contact you and just try to understand a bit more about what we've discussed today?
Yeah, sure, absolutely. So I'm an Instagrammer. So you can find me on Instagram at Veda Skin Clinic. I try to carry this holobiont philosophy of talking about mental health and about physical health and about the skin, and share my life experience as well to connect. So yes, Beta Skin Clinic on Instagram.
Well, thank you very much, and best of luck with everything you're doing every day.
Thank you so much.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.